Hi, this is Stephen Reichlin, host of Project Smoke on PBS, and you're listening to Dane on WGN.
WGN 720 WGN on the road with Dane here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, live on Michigan Avenue and in studio. And this is a guy who has been all over the world. We have interviewed him for probably the last better part, maybe more, of the last decade. And, you know, occasionally it is in person. Oftentimes it is on the phone. It has never been here in studio at WGN. Is a world-renowned barbecue legend, James Beard Award-winning author, New York Times bestseller, award-winning television personality, and barbecue Hall of Famer, right? So we are in some great company today. It's the one and only Stephen Reichlin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, oftentimes it is barbecue season. You are going to talk about some of the things that people are doing as they are inspired to take to the flame. And oftentimes, as you have done 28 times, it is for another book. You know, and you have been, I think, an entertainer for sure, but always an educator. And you do that through the books. And this latest one, you have kind of taken on something new that is always sort of important. You know, you look at the shelves in the grocery store and they're packed with sauces and rubs and different things. But you have taken it, deconstructed it. You have given people the tools to make their own and do it at a high level with your new book, Barbecue Sauces, Rubs, and Marinades.
Well, thank you. You know, if barbecue were fashion, these would be the accessories, but they are oh so important. Think about a rub. I mean, a rub is the kind of the first layer, the foundation of great barbecue. And then think about while the meat is cooking, you might hit it with a baste or a butter or a mop sauce, a glaze. So that's sort of the second layer. Barbecue sauce in my world goes on at the end of cooking or even served on the side. You may be surprised to know that I do not put the barbecue sauce on too early.
Right.
Otherwise, the sugar would burn. And then finally, salsas, chutneys, barbecue sauce. I mean, these are all the condiments that go on at the end.
Well, when you think about fashion, you have those the actress or whatever. So what are you wearing? They'll say, you know, the jewelry is done by Harry Winston or something like that. It's a designer jewelry. When it comes to sauces, there are some that are revered or mysterious and secret ingredients, right? You don't know what it is, but makes it great. But what you have done is you have given people the tools to make their own. I mean, and that is kind of neat. Normally, it's an afterthought. Okay, put on the sauce that you like or whatever discipline or regional favorite that may kind of fit into what it is that you're doing or you like. But you've got so many different ways, you know, to take those essential ingredients, break them down, and then make your own stuff. That's incredible.
It's super easy to make your own barbecue sauce. And I'm so glad, Dane, that you mentioned the regionality of barbecue sauce. You know, barbecue is not this one monolithic thing. I mean, if you're in northern North Carolina, what means barbecue sauce to you is a vinegar sauce that most people look at and say, where's the thickener? South Carolina, it's a mustard sauce. In Kansas City, it's sweet and smoky. In northern Alabama, it's a mayonnaise and vinegar-based barbecue sauce. So you can really travel the world simply by the kind of sauce you put on your meat.
There's a team photo of typical ingredients and typical styles and sauces. You're letting people, your fans, kind of branch out, push the envelope, and you've got some ingredients, some spices, some things that you're adding in there, having people play with that aren't typical, right?
Well, it's what I call the ringer, and there always should be a ringer in a barbecue sauce. One example is a shot of espresso. Another is vanilla, you know, which you'd never think of in a barbecue sauce. But I can't tell you the number of chefs that add a splash of vanilla. It adds a sweetness. You're familiar with it. You know, it even gives you a whiff of a bourbon barrel because vanillin is a natural compound found in oak used for aging bourbon.
We talked about, you know, over time, you know, it isn't just the meat, certainly an expert, an aficionado with a PhD in all the things that are meat, but you give people like more reasons to love what it is that their grill and the barbecue can do. And on the dessert side, you know, I noticed in here too, you're giving people, we've talked before about the smoked ice cream. That's always very impressive.
Yeah,
right?
that's really cool.
But you've got spice grilled pineapple with smoky whipped cream here too. So you're taking some of the fruits and vegetables and throwing them on the grill.
Hey, for me, the entire meal gets grilled, the entire day gets grilled, the entire plate gets grilled. So grilled desserts, very important. I'm actually working on a new book right now, and my first chapter is a chapter on grilled and smoked breakfast. So you know, we're going 24/7 with this thing.
So also brisket associated with a lot of the things that you do, ribs, you know, you'll often see on your social media, you're showing off some of the things that you've done with that. But I notice in a couple places in this book is that you're trying to lead people into either meats they wouldn't normally eat, or maybe they've tried and didn't have great experiences with. And I see some venison dishes in here.
Venison, and that's sort of by popular demand. It seems like every time I do a Project Smoke TV show, I'll get some email, you know, what about game? What about game? There are a lot of people who hunt out there. Well, for venison, I have a great sauce for you. It's called monkey gland sauce. It's one of the national barbecue sauces.
Doesn't contain any bits of real monkey?
I was going to say no primates were harmed in its preparation. No, it's actually, if you imagine a fruit chutney simmered with red wine, so you're kind of playing sweet and fruity against the kind of acidity of red wine. That is the essence of monkey gland sauce. Whoever invented it, you know, just wanted to pick something that would make people sit up and take notice.
Take notice and then probably drop it. But then, of course, when they're reassured that no monkeys involved, that would be the thing to do. We talked about the regionality of barbecue. Oftentimes when we have talked, you always have kind of that 10,000, maybe, I don't know, 50,000 foot galactic view of barbecue, seeing as kind of the global phenomenon that it is from all over the place. And you wonder what makes a person do what it is that they do, what inspires them, what kind of led them down that path to where they are today. People may not know, born in Japan. Born in Japan, grew up here, but you also did some of your college work on medieval cuisine.
Yeah, actually, I have a degree in French literature, I'm the only person in the barbecue field with a degree in French literature.
Right.
It did take 25 years to pay off, but I do now have several series in the French language that I tape in Quebec. So, in fact, I just finished a new one called Les Incontournables du Grill. That means the musts of barbecue. But travel's always, you know, when I start a new book, first thing I do is I pack a suitcase. I've circumnavigated the globe 4 times to research books like Planet Barbecue, Barbecue Bible. A lot of international sauces and rubs in this book.
Well, interested on the cuisine side for many years, Cordon Bleu, you know, in Paris as well. But what came first? Was it the travel? Was it the exposure to the travel, the exposure to the food, and thinking, wow, we can't get this at home. What else is out there? Or was it the food side where you wanted to go and maybe your tongue wanted to go, your palate, explore the world?
You know, when I graduated from college, I won a Watson Foundation Fellowship to study medieval cooking in Europe.
Which is known as delicious. Yeah,
I mean, I just kind of created, I was writing my thesis on an obscure medieval French poet. And while I was in the stacks one day, I found this cookbook called The Form of Curry. And it was a 14th century cookbook in Middle English. I thought, my God, you know, 800 years ago, people were writing cookbooks. This deserves a closer look. So that engendered my research year abroad. And that engendered the sort of passion for the intersection of food and culture and history. And my books, in many senses, are Trojan horses. You know, people buy them for the recipes, but I sneak in a lot of history, a lot of travelogue, because that's what really turns me on.
And then when people who think of you, and one of the producers that was last week, we were talking about it, and Stephen Reichlin, he's a big fan. This guy was a big fan of what it is that that you're doing. But you think about it, right, you're a little bit of a different animal than your average barbecue even star, right? Certainly you've got all the street cred of the books and the Hall of Fame and things like that. But as far as some of the things that you've done, you know, you've got a lot of that travel, a lot of that exposure. And then if people think you're just about books and just about food thought, you were, you know, beat one of the Iron Chefs on Japanese television when it comes down to throwing it down, you can do that too.
Yeah, I did that. That was a pretty amazing experience. And after beating Raucous Burrow Michiba, I promptly retired.
How does one celebrate?
It was very funny how they invited me to a hostess bar. And my sous chef was my son, Jake, who's a chef in Brooklyn. He has a gastro pub called Jake's Handcrafted. So he came over with me. The two of us went to one of these hostess clubs. And it turns out to be the most ridiculous scam and waste of time. It's just ladies complimenting you and flattering you in exchange for money. There's nothing more interesting about it than that. So I think both Jake and I couldn't wait to get out of there.
Well, still, like an amazing
experience. But it was a cool experience.
So as you have traveled, and on this show we talk a lot about that transformational travel, was there one visit, one trip that kind of set you on the path that has led you to 50 countries? Or has it just been kind of that long journey? And what are some of those places? Not everybody can do what it is that you do and go to all these places, but for the listeners, if you said, maybe pick this place, and maybe one other place, just as we'll give you some recommendations on restaurants here in Chicago. When it comes to travel and food, where would you suggest?
Well, boy, I mean, one place I would definitely go is Japan. The Japanese, and the land of my birth, but the Japanese have raised grilling to the level of art. They grill everything from incredible beef, and Kobe is only one of 27 different kinds of amazing, super well-marbled beef. Interestingly, Japanese grilling is very... They respect and love pristine flavors, but they do not love at all sauces, rubs, spices, anything. Even their charcoal, Binjotan charcoal, is manufactured in a way that it produces no smoke flavor, and they actually sort of boast about that. So Japan is one place. Opposite end of the complete opposite end of the spectrum.
Topeka, Kansas?
No, it would be India.
Oh, gotcha.
It would be India. Now, you got to get to India. Because in India, it's all about the spices. And in a way, by the time you're done with these incredible spice pastes and cooking the tandoor, it's almost irrelevant whether the meat is lamb or whether it's chicken, whether it's seafood, because there's so much spice on it, that Indian grilling is really about the spicing.
And when it comes to family road trips, you mentioned your son, you mentioned his place that he's a chef. Do you guys do, maybe as a kid, did you do any family road trips? Maybe you went to like Disney World, anything normal, or were you always doing like super cool stuff?
Nah, you know, my mom was a ballet dancer, so food was like not a big thing in my family. The grandparent level too. Yes, my grandparents were both great cooks, but my household, it was extreme food deprivation. So I think that's one of the reasons I went into food.
Well, thank God that you did. And of course, fans and readers to 28 books and all that are super excited that you have done that. And all those awards, the James Beard Awards, can't be wrong as well. This latest book, Stephen Reichlin's Barbecue Sauces, Rubs, and Marinades, it is available, I'm guessing, you know, Amazon, all your local bookstores, all those
all
places?
All local bookstores, yep. Amazon and, you know,
normal places you'd get books.
Yeah, my website, barbecuebible.com.
There you go.
Actually, it's to speaking about travels and foreign language stuff. So pretty exciting spring for me. Barbecue Bible was just translated into Italian. And as a result, in October, I'm going to be creating a brand new Italian grilling show in Italy for the Italian market.
How is that even possible?
Well,
and this is because, you know, you've got an iconic cuisine like Italian food,
right.
and it just seems, when you think about it, it's a world away from barbecue or grilling, right?
It's totally a world away, and it's very frustrating from the point of view of a food writer, because what is Italian grilling? Let's see, it's meat, salt, fire, maybe a drizzle of olive oil, maybe squeeze right. lemon juice. But the concept of this show will be that I'll arrive in Florence, I will watch a Florentine grill master create a bistecca alla fiorentina, again, fire, salt, and olive oil. And then I'll step up to the grill, I'll take the tongs, I will have gone to the market, and I'll do the Reichlin twist,
right.
which will certainly be more American and have more ingredients and more flavors than the Italian version.
On the language side of it, French obviously is a second language to yourself, yeah. and I think I read somewhere maybe 15 different languages or so that the books have been translated into.
We've been translated 17 at last count.
How does that work? And then you've got the Italian situation happening right now. I mean, as someone who is very particular about the way things are described and the words, do you just find someone that you can relate to and trust in that language, or do you find yourself having to at least learn a little bit about each one?
Well, I publish with Workman Publishing, which is a very fine quality oriented publisher. I mean, the amount of time we spend getting things right is, I'm sure it's not cost efficient anymore.
Right.
And they have publishing partners abroad. So in Germany, we work with a company called Uhlmann, which is a very fine publisher. Actually, we started working with a second one, so those two are kind of competing with each other. In Holland, with a company called Caractère. In Italy, with Rizzoli. So, you know, when my first book came out in French, I did double-check the translation. Then I realized, you know what? These are professional
right.
translators.
Let
they
them
know
be
their
good
job.
At what they do.
Let them do what they do, and let me be what I do.
And on the travel side, often found a world away, but here, full circle, right here in Chicago, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, what are you, I mean, obviously you're doing some of this in support of the book, but what else are you going to do while you're here?
So when I travel on book tour, I always try and have interesting meals, and I always try and find meals that, you know, sort of related to what I do, not necessarily barbecue joints, but last night I went to a restaurant called Bad Hunter. It's a vegetable-centric place, a lot of charred vegetables. vegetables, a lot of grilling and ash.
Vegetable forward. So yeah. I'm thinking, is it like what? Butternut squash?
No, no. No, it's way more interesting than that. Not that butternut squash is not interesting, but give you an example. So I had a salad that was made. They took sugar snap peas, put them in a grill basket, laid them on the embers so they got completely charred and smoky. Then those were tossed with jalapeno chilies, a vinaigrette, and then there was a very interesting puree. I think it was a puree of sunflower seeds that that came with it. So, you know, totally unexpected. What else did I have? I had a chocolate mousse that was a combination of avocado and chocolate.
Oh.
That was really interesting. Grilled radishes. You know, I'd never had a grilled radish before, but it turns out that grilling brings out crazy sweet caramel smokers.
Right?
So, you know, so they're thinking it and I'm learning from it.
So, Stephen Reichlin, you travel the world. You've done so many different things. And I'm typically, yeah, I mean, maybe in the traditional way, you know, maybe by boat. I don't know, bicycle. Certainly you're going to rent a bicycle while you're here in
Chicago. I'm going to rent a bike. I love riding along the lake here. I'm going to go to the Art Institute because that's a fabulous. Tonight I'm dining at a place called El Che Bar. Do you know that?
Oh.
Do you know that?
Yes. Okay. It's Argentinian.
Okay.
It's all live fire.
Okay. Yeah.
And they do a lot of stuff with the embers. And John Mannion is the chef owner there. And he is absolutely awesome. I'm sure he knows you're, does he know you're coming?
I think they might because the when they
called they put
to confirm,
a big welcome Stephen sign.
No, when they called to confirm the reservation, they said, "Is that you?
Is that you?" That's awesome.
But I don't know. I'm the kind of guy that introduces myself to my parents when I call. You know, in case they've forgotten.
Just
since
so you
last
know.
Phone call. Right.
Yeah. No. You should love it. Okay. It should be really really great. And then I think just based on the kind of the grilling forward side of it, I mean, it'll
See,
be
you're
right.
Using
up
the
your
word
alley.
Forward now, vegetable forward,
well,
meat
got,
forward, grill forward.
Next thing you know, I'll be saying flavor profile.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to ask, so you're going to be on a bike here in Chicago, but oftentimes we'll ask our guests, like, first car.
Yeah.
Do you have a car? Or is it Ed Begley Jr. where you just refuse to use a car? Like, what was your first car growing up?
My first car was a VW microbus. I was
oh,
in a
those
rock
are
band.
Awesome. Oh,
I know. It was totally cool. I painted it psychedelic. I had a band. You know, we moved my band equipment around in it. And, it was really fun. And then I remember, I think there may have been a hearse was my second car.
What?
But I'm a child of the 60s, you know. So I was very much a hippie.
The microbus is really great. I just saw one of those the other day coming back from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The hearse, you know, I don't know. It kind of like weirded me out just a little bit, maybe, unless I was assured that it was, you know, never used in any actual funerals. But
I'm pretty sure my hearse was used in actual funerals. The thing about it, which, you know, back then you didn't worry about gas prices. It got like 3 miles to a gallon or something.
Oh,
it was the most inefficient fuel car. But when I'm in Miami, I like to get around by bike. I love biking. I take a ride every morning from 6 to 7. I listen to my Italian language tapes to try and get ready for my...
because you're going to be an Italian television
experience.
Star, right?
Yeah, I'm going to try.
All right. Traveling the world and telling the stories of food, including our very own stories here in Chicago as well. And, of course, in the new book, Barbecue Sauces, Rubs, and Marinades. So, Stephen Reichlin, thanks so much for what you're doing. Of course, we're all better for it, and you know that. And thanks for being on WGN today.
Thank you. Great show. Appreciate it, Dane. Thank you.